Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, joined today by the Vicars of Vegetables. Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman are professors in the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, ready to answer your vegetable questions. We're not much on flowers today. Unless they might be edible. Would you take an edible flower?
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, there are some edible, you know, some vegetables that are really edible flowers, right? Let's think about that. The artichoke.
The artichoke is an excellent example.
Yeah.
The artichoke is a flower?
What you're eating are bracts.
Yeah, that's
right. B-R-A-C-T-S. Those are vegetable bracts.
I think it's the only vegetable. Like what happened during domestication there, Erwin? Like, what?
I think they got partway into it and they gave up.
Don't you think it was like a quiz show, like 10,000 years ago? Like, pick the tissue least likely to be turned into a vegetable.
Yeah, because, boy, there's just not much edible tissue on the base of those bracts. But when you dip them in butter and you're willing to put that much work into it.
Yeah. It's the entertainment factor, you know, and not a lot of vegetables come with their own spoon.
That's true.
So little butter, Italian style breadcrumbs, and
perfect
in there. That's great. Well,
now another one would be broccoli and cauliflower, which really are floral parts that you're eating, right?
Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah,
and very nutritious floral parts. Yeah, I might add as well.
Absolutely.
And squash flowers.
Squash flowers.
Does anyone enjoy that soup? Squash flower soup. I made some this last summer. We had some terrific squash out in the field, and you know, you can also dip them in tempura. Mm. And I bet there are any number of listeners out there at this very moment salivating at the thought of that as they're dipping their artichoke bracts into some steaming butter.
That reminds me of the chrysanthemum, which is also done that way. Typically in Asia, the chrysanthemum flower is consumed that way.
So we can talk about flowers as long as you can eat them.
Yeah, that's right.
As long as you can eat them.
All right.
But any vegetable. And that would include any vegetable, although we tend to zero in on a few, beets and chilies and
what
else?
There's a fascination out there with chili peppers, which is unexpected, I think.
Jim, you were mentioning, especially given the local cuisine.
Yeah, because, you know, we get a lot of calls about this, but... But that's not associated with common Wisconsin cuisine, is it? I mean, do you ever see anybody saying, "Man, I got the bratwurst," you know, and I just piled on the chili peppers. You know, I never have I heard that. And lutefisk is not associated with hot chilies at all. So really.
Well, let's give our listeners a chance to call in. If you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, maybe a haiku. We haven't done any haikus in a while.
You know, I forgot my poetry book, and we were going to finish. I mean, last year, we almost got to the completion of Pablo Neruda's Ode to the Tomato.
Yeah, that's true.
So if there's any listener out there who could turn to the second half of that stanza and complete that poem for us, that would be appreciated.
And here's the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Now, what about mole?
Yeah, that's right. And Packard sent it with an accent. And how would that be pronounced then?
I think you'd have to say mole.
And I don't think that's appropriate. You don't put an accent on mole. It's not mole.
It's the
mole.
Accents. Yeah, the accents on the
mole.
Also, yeah.
Mole. So, and this is a fascinating mixture of spices. The two most important of which, generally, are ground up chili peppers, generally the ancho types, you know, those browned sort of peppers, mm-hmm. or the pasilla types. And what else do they add to it? Chocolate.
Mm-hmm. I mean... What a fabulous combination.
Can it get any better than that? Or,
I don't know.
And I bet there are listeners out there right now at this very moment salivating at the thought of an artichoke and then at the same time thinking, what if I dip that artichoke, that tender bract, into a mole sauce?
Oh, mole sauce. Oh,
think about that. Jim Packard is basically out of control at this very moment over my left shoulder here.
Dale in Rockford will give you a chance. Hi, Dale. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to mention a few tomato varieties.
Tomato varieties, okay.
That are heirloom that I've been growing for a number of years that I consider to be extra special. One would be something called a Mexico midget. It's a grape tomato. Another would be a larger than a grape tomato, more like a potent tomato. It's called Tommy Toe.
You know, we have that's an ex-governor, you know, here. Tommy's toe is kind of a sensitive issue in this state, maybe not in the Rockford area.
It's probably a little close to the size of his nose.
But, okay.
Okay, now we're getting down to details.
And there was another variety called Italian heirloom, mm-hmm. and then Amish paste. I've been growing these. I get the seeds from Seed Savers. And these are a non-hybrid tomato. They just are extra, extra flavorful. If somebody's looking for something that's not hybrid, these go highly, highly recommended.
Well, we have a real bad line with you there, Dale. So I think I've got Mexico Midget, I've got Tommy Toe, I've got Italian Heirloom, and I've got Amish
Paste.
These tend to be, these are good tomatoes. However, I don't know about Tommy's toe. I'm going to have a difficult time with that one.
Just the visual on that is
yeah,
tough for you, isn't it?
You know, how can you slice into Tommy? No, I'm not going there. Yeah. And Mexico Midget,
that's another complete issue.
We're going to cross that one out. But the Super Italian Paste is, I agree with him, I used to grow that in California. And, of course, when I moved to the great state of Wisconsin, one of the things that I was most disappointed by here was the length of the growing season.
Yeah.
And Super Italian Paste is just way too late. So so for our Rockford friends, here's what we did. We actually crossed it, and we tried to incorporate that, you know, that great Super Italian paste flavor, and the Amish paste, the same thing. Mm-hmm. It has a bit of a stripe. It's lovely. I mean, it's a lovely, but it's too late. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't have patience for these things. I've got to have my sauce early. I mean, I'm waiting till October.
So how does that compare to something like a Wisconsin 55?
Those are early tomatoes.
That's pretty early.
But the problem with there is you don't get the solids.
Yeah.
You just, I mean, it's basically a, you know, a,
it's an eating tomato, isn't it? It's a fresh eating tomato?
And a weapon, I think. It's a I think that's one you would throw, yeah. I think. I wouldn't throw an Amish paste.
So to really get the flavor development and the solids development, you really need something that's more like, what, 70 days, 80 days, something like
that? We can probably go, if you, you know, obviously some of the lines that we have now are, they tend to be small in the fruit size, but they also tend to incorporate, I think, the flavor that our Rockford caller is talking about, which I agree with. And that flavor is really a lot about, you know, sugars, tomatoes.
Sure.
And so it can mature rapidly, but it also has the high solids associated with making sauce, because after all, that's all I'm into. And that's what I bet this caller is into. And
yeah.
So he'll have to send a little of Tommy's toe to us. But I, if he can make up a little sauce.
It's an heirloom, though, so it's been around before Tommy, probably, our former governor. Mm-hmm. Sherry in Port Wing, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I'm overwintering two parsley plants. One is a first-year plant that I brought in, and the other one belongs to some summer people, and theirs is a three-year-old plant and has these really robust, you know, giant thumb-size kind of tuberous roots sticking up, and it was really glorious when I brought it in. It's in a solarium, south-facing, warm window. And the main plant just died off. It made a bunch of little babies, but they're very feeble. And I don't know, is there an end run year for parsley plants?
Parsley? Don't you think she has celeriac? You know, if it's...
Well, yeah.
What do you think, Erwin?
She could have root parsley. I think it could be root parsley. But are you asking, is your question whether, you know, the life cycle of this thing is over? Is that what you're asking? I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so. I think you can rescue those. Now, I mean, I think it's difficult to overwinter them inside. I think that's a challenge, but you'd probably have to baby those. But you should have some small propagules off that root that you could rescue and save.
No, I do. I have quite a few, as a matter of fact. But they're very feeble. So I thought, should I wait until summer to put them out, or do you just leave them attached? It's in a big pot.
Yeah, I don't think you have any problem. I mean, you know, the main root will decay, so you could certainly cut them away. and you could replant those, and you could keep them nice and warm and make sure they have sun on them, and then take them outside.
Okay.
When the spring comes around.
Yeah, why not?
That, okay.
That should work.
But right. Feeble parsley, is that ever called for in any recipes that you're aware of? Never. You know, would Chef Eric use that? Chop feeble parsley, you know, and no.
But it'll be strong parsley.
Oh, I see.
After the summer sun hits it. Okay. Margaret and Madison, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hello. We've been eating more and more plants, and I've been trying to introduce different kinds of vegetables into our diet. And this summer we were in Greece and tried okra.
Oh.
And I loved it. So I'd like to grow okra in my garden this summer, and I'm wondering if it's possible here.
It's, you know, we're a little north for it, although it can be done. People do it. Jim and I have, you know, we're making faces right now. It's sort of that mucilaginous texture that you can find in okra that, Jim, how would you describe that?
It's the dripping goober, you know, off the lower lip. I think that's most commonly associated with okra. And although it does have a flavor.
Some people love it. Yeah,
you know, it's definitely a fun food.
Yeah. Well, now you can grow. I mean, it would do much better 150 miles south of here for sure.
A colleague who grew it.
Yeah.
There's a friend of mine who's an okra fanatic,
and it works.
And you can do it, but you're going to have to transplant it.
Yeah.
It's the only way it's going to work. You cannot direct seed it here in Madison.
Oh.
But if you transplant it, you can get it late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where would I find okra plants?
Well, you buy okra seeds.
You just grow transplants yourself. Produce those transplants real early in the late winter.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And get them out in the field early, and then you should be able to get mature fruit.
Okay. And
this is the only. You know what that vegetable is interesting. Isn't that related?
It's a Malvaceae.
It's a Malvaceae,
which is the same family as cotton.
Cotton.
Is that right?
That's right.
Interesting.
And it's the only vegetable that I know of in that family. Do you know any other Malvaceae?
No, I do not. That's the only vegetable in that family.
Yeah.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay.
Maybe that should tell us something.
I don't know where you would get. I don't know. You know, I've never seed for that, though, at Young's.
No, because people don't. Yeah,
yeah, it's just people not, don't.
This is an Arkansas thing.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So you may need to look around a little bit to find some
and
seeds.
And check out a variety. If you see one's called Tommy's Toe Okra,
yeah,
you want to avoid that one. Right. Yeah, you're not going to buy that variety at all.
Okay. Thanks, Margaret.
We don't want to even know where that would go.
Asus and Walworth, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, I heard you were talking about mole, and I happened to help years ago my grandmother to prepare mole.
Oh,
just
right.
So you know, there's over 200 varieties of mole, but the main thing is that cocoa or chocolate was added to diminish the spiciness of it when the Spaniards arrived first to the American continent. But I have a recipe that does not require any chocolate or any other things other than natural spices, because you see, when you put too much chocolate, then it becomes very kind of unhealthy. If you understand what I mean for your stomach, but it has.
I have to disagree with you on this one. I think any food that incorporates chocolate gets a thumbs up from me. You're going to take out the part that I like the best?
Well, no. What happens is that if you use too much, but the recipe for my grandmother comes from Puebla. That's where mole is from. And
you're right.
She never used any chocolate or sugar. And
did she make it out of chili peppers, or did she use pumpkin seeds or squash seeds?
Yeah, she used the chili peppers.
Chili peppers?
Yeah, chili peppers, the pumpkin
now,
seeds.
Now, okay. You're going to have to give us the recipe. That's all there is to it.
Well, with the pumpkin.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's the chili peppers, the ancho, and the
morita. You use anchos?
Yes, and
ancho,
morita.
And what else? I'm sorry? You have to go
morita,
slowly.
Morita,
okay,
M-O-R-I-T-A.
Yes.
And then you add peanuts. And then
this is the healthy part to substitute for the evil chocolate.
No, this is something that all the moles have.
They have nuts. That's correct.
And then the pecans. Mm-hmm. And then some... some animal cookies. That's
pecans.
Where some of the sweetness comes in.
Half a pound of lard.
Yeah.
You know, you've made this so healthy. You've eliminated that evil chocolate. But I think the animal cookies, half pound of lard, and pecans have definitely made this into a heart-healthy food.
Well, you can convert to a very healthy food, of course, if you add the cocoa instead of plain chocolate with sugar. But that's what they had when the Aztecs were making it, only the plain cocoa. The sugar was added when the Spaniards arrived. Mm-hmm. So they have all this food, and then they fried it all together, and then blend it.
Okay,
and that's
now,
where
you
mole
fry it all
over.
Together, and then you actually put it in a blender.
Well, no, we didn't put it in the blender. What we did, we just smashed it down. Remember the old metate? You actually have to grind it down, a small grinder, and then by hand. And it took us about 7 days to make mole for 400 people. So
you make mole for a crowd? You must have a heck of a family reunion there.
Yes, we did. So, but once you have all this, you can add it to, of course, turkey, any kind of poultry. And there's another kind of mole, which is more called an amaranto, which is for pork. But that's another story. I can email you the recipe.
Do you make a mole? Do you make any moles out of the squash seeds? That's a green mole. My son loves the green mole on either pork or fish, which is made out of the squash seeds.
So where do you put the pumpkin seeds in? I mean, how does that? What do you do with the pumpkin seeds? Do you roast them first?
Well, usually in Mexico, you always buy the pumpkin seeds already roasted.
I see.
So all you have to do is grind it.
I see.
But with the rest of the food. But the pumpkin seed is pretty much used for the green mole, which has the green tomatoes.
Yep.
So you're a mole guy. This is really terrific. Let me make sure we got this. So we've got chile ancho, chile morita. Then you got peanuts, pecans, and basically cocoa.
Yes.
Half a pound of lard and no chocolate. Okay.
Yes, and then you mix all this and you fry it. And of course, you remove the seeds from the peppers. Otherwise, you will have a very spicy mole, and you don't want that.
No. Thanks, Aces.
The important part of all this is that after you get all this cooked up and the paste is done, what you have to do is put this mole paste on those paper bags that you get from the store, and you have to spread it around for about 7 or 8 days, then all the fat will come out and it will be perfectly healthy.
Oh. Well,
that's the secret to making it heart healthy. Spread it around on those old paper bags. That's it. I just buy the Doña Marita or Doña someone. What about, do you ever try those? What about the ones you can get at the grocery store? Are those any good?
They're good, but they're not.
Not as good as yours.
Yes. We did parties for friends that came over from Spain, and we entertained 500 to 600 people every year, at least twice a year. And I had a very large family in Spain and in Mexico. And they always came from Spain saying, oh, I can't eat mole, I love it, but it gets me sick. And my grandmother said, no, this one won't get you sick because this is what we do with it. And I find out that the good way, that once you do this process and you get rid of all that fat on those paper bags, believe me, it's just so healthy and good for your stomach, and it won't make you sick.
And, you know, just by the sound of your voice, I can tell that, you know, you would live a healthy lifestyle. So I think you've really been able to accomplish that feat.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. And if you want to email that to me, and just so that we can put it up online, that would be a good thing. Email me that recipe at just go online to Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org. And you'll see my name and click on that and send me that email. Appreciate it very much. Send me that recipe.
Jim, maybe some of the listeners don't know about, you know, the combination that mole is. Now, were the Aztecs were eating peppers first. Is that how it works? And then chocolate came in later? How did that happen?
God, you know, I don't know the actual sequence, but you've got to admire any culture that can take hot chili peppers and combine it you know, with chocolate, you know, which was really kind of a sacred food only grown in the lowland in tropics, right, within Mesoamerica, and combine that into a sauce.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
He's right, the fact that, you know, that the Spaniards actually added the, you know, the sugar component to that because the drink that was actually, the drinks that were actually eaten by Montezuma that are described by the scribes, you know, the Spanish scribes who watched Montezuma were actually that. It was actually a chocolate mixture with chili peppers added to it. So that was how it was spiced up.
We'll take some more calls in just a minute. Professor James Nienhaus and Erwin Goldman from the Department of Horticulture, our guest on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables today with our vicars of vegetables, Jim Nienhaus and Erwin Goldman. Thanks for listening in. And Jeff in Claremont, Iowa has been waiting a while, so let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Today I watched an episode of The Sopranos one evening, and they were eating zucchini flowerettes. Can you tell me anything about them?
What did they, were they using them in a soup, or were they making them into a tempura? I mean, the flowers
were sauteed. They were sauteed, I believe.
Oh, that's cool. That sounds so Italian, you know? But, you know, the flowers are, you know, are large and fleshy and actually quite sweet. And they're what I make, I love to make this squash soup in the fall. I mean, there's just nothing as thrilling as that. And I don't have my favorite recipe up on Larry Mueller's
We should put it up.
Website. Yeah. Oh, but there's one that I was given just late last fall, which includes lobster bisque, which is a little out of my price range. But I was able to find a cheap lobster bisque at my favorite store, Woodman's, right? Where they have everything there. Anyway, I made the tremendous, really terrific squash soup. And, you know, the beautiful thing is when you serve it, you know, to put a squash flower, you know, floating in the top. I mean,
that's the way to do it.
But you can actually tempura them, and it's very likely that, you know, that the Italians would saute that. That's terrific.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for calling. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, hi to you.
I have a couple things. One is I have a suggestion for using okra that we discovered that there's no slime and it's delicious, is we pickle it with our standard dill pickle recipe.
Oh.
And it's great. In fact, there's a very funny story. We gave 2 jars of these pickles to a friend of ours, and he kept asking his wife if she wanted to try them. He kept telling her they're really good. And she kept saying, oh, okra, slime, yuck, yuck, no. And finally, when he got down to the last pickle, he said, are you sure you don't want to try it? She said, well, all right, I'll try it. She bit into it, and she said, you ate all of that? She came to us the next year for the recipe and how to grow okra.
And how do you grow your okra up in Sturgeon Bay?
Well, at that time, we were living in Iowa, but we do grow it up here.
And do you transplant it?
My husband is the one who does it, and I'm sure that he does transplant it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you may want to have it. Do you have a seed source available? Did you say some seed?
I think actually there's another caller coming up online who may have some information on that.
Okay. And you know also I have a haiku.
Okay.
Oh, an okra.
It's my first attempt at a haiku.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to get this down. I hope it's an okra haiku.
Actually, it isn't. It's a haiku on a Peruvian purple pepper that a friend gave us.
Oh, a bacaram, I bet. Oh, Erwin's going to talk about that in just a few moments.
Okay.
Hit it.
Lovely to look at. Purple pepper from Peru, fire, no ice, great pain.
Fire, no ice, great pain, and great flavor. I think you have to have a four-line stanza, great pain and great flavor. I bet it's a...
Do you enjoy
peppers from Peru? Do you?
Isn't that what
motivated you to write this haiku?
Actually, your solicitation of haikus motivated me to write it. But I looked up in the dictionary, and it said 5, 7, and 5 syllables.
Oh, I always add the... I just, you know, but we're flexible.
Oh, okay.
We're not... Erwin and I are in the, you know, College of Agriculture.
We're flexible.
You know?
Okay, so what...
English
what is your,
rules, eh.
What is
sometimes...
No, 5, 7, and 5 is fine unless you want to add another line and then go ahead.
Yeah.
And another line would be 4?
Another line would be after the great no fire, ice, and flavor, pain and flavor, because you've got a Peruvian bacaram chili So those are very flavorful and very aromatic.
Are they
so
little,
next
tiny,
to you, no,
little
there
tiny
are
peppers. These are little tiny peppers. They're maybe an inch long and they're kind of cone shaped.
Oh yeah, no,
they're long, skinny, teeny.
There are actually we had two ladies. Undergraduates from the Department of Horticulture who became fascinated with the Peruvian peppers are for the most part bacardams, yeah. And they're just too late here, and they actually selected out from the World Collection a couple of varieties that did well in Madison, and they got quite a bit of seed from those, so that should be fun. But yeah. You found this article in Science Magazine, Irwin. Tell us about this.
Well, some of the listeners out there may have seen this article in the State Journal this morning, and it was excerpted from the Science article about the domestication and dispersal of chili peppers in the Americas. It's a beautiful piece. The author, there's a number of authors, and they're from the lead author's from the Smithsonian. She's an anthropologist, and her name is Linda Perry. And in the paper, they describe a technique to try to figure out where peppers come from and when peppers were being used. They basically took scrapings from stone grinding instruments and kitchen instruments all around these settlements in the Americas, all the way from the Bahamas, all the way through Central and South America, and found that peppers were domesticated and consumed along with corn and cassava going back 6,000 years before the present time. So it's a beautiful analysis of it, and they use starch grains. They figured out how to look for starch grains, which are very durable. And so clearly in the cooking vessels, this is in the pre-ceramic period now in the Americas, in the cooking vessels in the Bahamas and in ancient Peru, they were eating, native people were eating corn, cassava, and pepper all together. So one of the interesting things about this is, of course, why did this plant become domesticated so early? It's not corn, you could understand, you get a lot of calories, and cassava, you get a lot of calories, and pepper is a different creature. It brings spice, it brings flavor,
and probably
medicine. Right. So I suspect that some of that domestication had to do with a plant that had a medicinal use as well as a spice use. Would you agree?
I would bet, because of the you can almost, they consider tobacco to be a hallucinogenic,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in fact, the alkaloids associated with, capsaicin would also have a huge effect, and I'm sure that would have influenced people. Plus, the fact that it's fairly easy to domesticate.
Mm-hmm.
It's widely distributed within, Mesoamerica and South America as well. So I can see that the bright colors would have naturally attracted people. And once they figured out that the birds would eat it, I bet they said, why don't we?
Stella, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Clyde in Denmark, it's your turn. Hi, Clyde.
Hi. Two things. First, some edible flowers, and then on okra. A couple more edible flowers, nasturtiums and pansies are really good in salads and really
That's
bring
right.
a lot of comments.
Mm-hmm.
You can't saute them, though, which... It was kind of a prerequisite here.
No, this is for fresh stuff.
Okay.
Fresh stuff.
Then okra, I grow it in my garden every year, and I start it from seed.
But you transplant it.
What?
But you don't direct seed it, you transplant it.
No, it doesn't like to be transplanted. Because
you direct seed it?
Direct seed it. You're not going for a mature thing anyway. You're going for just the small, immature pod.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
And so,
where are you located? Denmark.
Denmark. Well, that's northeast.
That's in Europe.
I do plant it in a very sunny part of the garden. Usually plant it along with my watermelon and cantaloupe, and it sticks up above them in the sunniest part of the garden. And the plants get quite tall. There's a number of different varieties, and a lot of the different seed catalogs have them. You have to kind of hunt through because...
There's not one called Tommy's Toe, though, is there?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
no.
God, I was hoping that would come up again.
And it does freeze very well, too, but you want to pick the pods when they're about an inch and a half long before they get any fibers in them. And you don't have to blanch them. You just put them in a Ziploc freeze them, and then you can use them in your casseroles and soups and stuff.
You must be in a blessed environment, though, because you're growing three things that are really not all that easy to grow here. Okra, watermelon, and melons. are all going to be, you know, late maturing.
Well, yeah, but, we, you know, we're in this...
You're blessed to be in Denmark.
We're in the tropics now, you know. It doesn't frost until late, right?
Mm-hmm. So, that's right. That's right.
But, no, it doesn't like to be transplanted, the okra.
But you got to do it.
Because it gets real leggy if you try and grow it for transplants.
I've transplanted it successfully. And, you know, of course, it's all about the quality of the seedling. I mean, if you can get a late lady... If you allow the seedlings to get too leggy, then you try to transplant, you're going to have troubles. But you've got to get them when they're still growing, you know, vigorously growing, and you have to have a lot of light. I mean, growing transplants, it's not an easy process either. I mean, you can't just put them in your basement. It requires a heck of a lot of light and a heck of a lot of heat. You know, I don't think anyone – it's very difficult to do this in your home. You really need a greenhouse to be able to grow successful seedlings. But I've only grown it – I've only transplanted it myself, and that's because – you know, I get hungry a little earlier in the season than you do. You know, I guess that's what it boils down to.
And I just checked the Jung's catalog, and it has a hybrid okra hybrid called Cajun Delight that gets 3.5 to 5 inch pods even in this northern area. So it's got a pretty good flavor, they say. So anyway, that's what I'm told.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Clyde. Garrett in Madison, your turn. Hi, Garrett.
Yes, more to say about okra.
Yeah.
I successfully have grown it here in Madison for 3 years in a row now.
Good for you.
It's getting better each year.
What type do you grow?
I start right from seeds. I buy...
Now, you're another direct seeding?
Yes.
Wow.
I buy the seed pods right in town here in Johansson's, put them in May, about the same time I plant tomatoes.
Okay, end of May.
Full sun.
Direct, and are you direct seeding at the end of May?
Oh, yeah.
Tomatoes as well?
No, tomatoes I do from seedlings, but at the same time I plant tomatoes is when I start the okra.
Mm-hmm.
They grow real slow through June. They only maybe get 6 inches tall.
Yeah, because they really need the heat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just not going to do well unless they have high temperatures. You're right, but it's not going to grow. They won't germinate in cool soils, that's for sure.
But by July, they are as tall as corn, and in August, I'm harvesting every other day. Harvesting the entire patch.
Where's your garden located? I think, you know,
right
instead
in
of me,
Madison here.
Instead of growing them myself, obviously I don't have
go
any skill.
Tour.
I'm not in the, you know, I've lacked some okra growing skills. Hmm. I'm just going to stop by his garden.
There you go. Last summer when it was really dry and the earth was cracking, inch-wide cracks, I was dumping 5 gallon pails of pond water into those cracks to keep this okra healthy.
Boy, oh boy.
Well, that's a kind of a dedication. Now, if you're harvesting every other day, that's really too frequent. I think you should just
share. Well, I have to give it away at work and
What variety do you...
I tried both varieties that Johansson sold this year, the spineless and then the regular. I like the regular better. The spineless didn't produce quite as well.
No. From Johansson's?
Yep, just from seeds.
Next time Karen Johansson's on, I'm going to have to ask her about okra.
Get special packages.
She's, you know, I just didn't know she was an okra kind of a woman. But
she spends a lot of time in okra growing areas when she's on vacation.
The pickled okra is terrific, especially for playing poker. You know, it is just a terrific thing. Yeah.
Thanks, Garrett. Judy in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you this story. A number of years ago, my husband, Ed, who grew up on a dairy farm in Scott County, Minnesota, was planting our garden in Oklahoma. And it was our first garden. Children were all standing around, and we're there, and we're planting. And the neighbor is leaning over the fence, and he walked up and down, and he said, "Aid, where's your okra?" And Ed said, "Okra? I mean, I don't even think we knew what okra was." And he said, "You don't eat okra, son. That's why you're so puny."
Ed, where's your okra? I like that.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks for calling. Wow. Well, let's go to Frank in Cedarburg. Frank?
Yeah, hi. Talking about okra, it grows in Cedarburg also, by the way.
Good.
I have another question now.
Is that in Europe?
What is the secret of growing fennel?
Secret of growing fennel?
Fall.
Fall?
Yeah. It's going to have to be a fall crop. It's the trouble with fennel is that if you plant it early in the season, it's a cool season crop. The other alternative is to move to the Pacific Northwest, is where, you know, it's just... Or it will overwinter, right? And then it will flower. But if you put it in early in the season, it's going to go into, it will bolt. It's a fall season crop. I've had most, that's my success, has been in the fall season with
fennel. I'll tell you what, I'm going to move out to Portland, Oregon then.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Is that your favorite vegetable? How do you use that? How do you cook it? Do you saute it with okra? Or?
Well, what you do is you chop it up.
Yeah. And I love, you know, I love it with seafood. Yeah, especially salmon.
And Frank uses it in salads as well. Chop it up and put in salads. Frank, thank you. Yeah. Dwayne, your turn in River Falls. Hi, Dwayne.
Hello.
What have you got for us today?
Well, not an okra question. It's more a seed starting question. When, you know, I've just heard that I shouldn't be starting at home anyway because I don't have the right equipment. But the problem I have is with my salsa making. I know this is close to their hearts too, but my peppers usually ripen first, and I'm all done with them before the tomatoes are ready.
Oh, timing issue.
I do mostly container gardening. Is there some way I can force them to come in at the same time?
Wow, I think I sense some early season greed here. Are you cleaning those pepper plants off and not allowing them to continue to produce fruit?
No.
I think a little patience would go a long ways.
Or do they quit growing? Or do they quit?
They keep producing. Or they quit producing then about the time the tomatoes kick in.
Oh, they should. Well, of course, you're container gardening. You maybe have some water stress problems.
I've tried several different water strategies in this.
Do you have any soil available to you? What do you think, Irwin?
Yeah, I think, you know, that could hasten maturity, right, to have them in a container.
Yeah,
so they would finish their life cycle a little bit earlier than they would in the field.
And then the plants get big, and then they start to, you get transpiration at such high rates, and then you can't add enough water during the day to actually keep them from, because remember that, wasn't it last year? No, it was the year before last. The year before last, that was the year without the pepper. Mm-hmm. Right, because I had peppers everywhere planted, and they, remember what happened was we went into that big drought, and every one of my flower buds aborted.
Yeah, they were right at that critical stage.
Right at the critical stage, so I think I think one of the mistakes the container gardeners make is, I think sometimes they don't have enough appreciation of just how much water those plants go through. It's not a thimbleful; it's gallons per day.
I know. I've done this for many years, and I've gone to automatic watering.
You've got an automatic system. Yeah.
So I drip irrigation three times a day.
What kind of peppers are you growing?
Pardon?
What kind of peppers are you growing?
I've done some bells, some jalapenos, and I wanted to expand this year.
The jalapeno, I think, you know, is a very robust pepper, which seems to do well here in Madison. I think that's a very good choice. And you can scratch the bells.
Some of those red garden chili peppers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we, you know, Irwin and I are not into bell peppers.
No, so, the garden chili ones.
What are those?
That's like a 6-inch long, skinny one, kind of like a carrot shaped.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those might be more robust. I think you made a good choice with the jalapenos, though.
Okay.
I think there's a remarkably well adapted.
And you can't just plant those later.
No, I would. Gosh, you know, that mine produce up until killing.
Until the fall.
But Dwayne's in River Falls, so maybe that makes a difference.
Yeah, that could make a difference, too.
Okay. I would move to Belgium.
Okay.
Ed, where's your okra?
Thanks, Dwayne. Jim in Blue River, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Oh, you know what? I bet Ed, I think Ed had a haiku when I went.
Oh, no. Because that would have been a good one.
Well, maybe he'll call back.
Couldn't that be the first line? Ed, where's your okra? Now let's work on the second stanza to that haiku. That's our first line.
Jim in Blue River, hi.
Hi. Just before I start on my question, that fennel question that just came up, you have to be certain of which kind of fennel. There are two kinds of fennel, and one's for tops and the other is for the root. And if you don't watch what kind of seed you get, you're going to get the wrong stuff. The other is Blue River is 70 miles west of Wisconsin, and we're zone 4. And I used to transplant my okra from peat pots that I started inside. And I had a crop failure 1 year, so I seeded them, and I got wonderful okra. So since then, I've been seeding okra directly.
Wow.
Get about 6 weeks of crop out of it that way, and we fry ours after we put them in a batter. And they're not gummy that way.
Mm-hmm.
A pepper question. Last year I had a bad year with my peppers, and I was reading that maybe they like a more acidic soil than the rest of my garden. My garden is probably pretty sweet with the liming, and I wondered what your thoughts were on pH for peppers.
Okay. I think pH for peppers.
Standard pH. I don't think they go for acidic soils at all.
No, they're shaking their heads no. It might have been something else, Jim. Maybe it was the water. Maybe it was cold at the wrong time.
Remember 2 years ago, it was almost a year without the pepper, right? It was a sad year. But, you know, I'm fascinated by the breadth of the Wisconsin public radio audience. I would have never imagined that there would be this many okra calls.
Well, I think all five of the growers.
All five there, people who actually, all five of them called in.
Right,
those, they have a passion for it. But do you see this? Have you ever seen people walk around, you know, on State Street, going over to the football game saying, hey, get me a brop, and hey, get me some of them okra over there, Ed. You know, I never see this.
No.
This is not a...
No.
What is going on? You get
maybe
only the cream of the crop here.
Maybe we're not connected with the general public like we think we are.
Is it possible that we work at the university and just don't get out enough? Is there a mass okra movement out there that we're...
Well, we have a lot of okra growers among our listeners, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Henry, there's a we've tapped into this, you know, this Malvasi strain of desire here.
Jim Nianos and Irwin Goldman, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables today with our Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, professors in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Glad to have you listening in. If you want to join us, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Lots of callers online already, so we will go back to the phones and to Mary in La Crosse. Mary, hello to you.
Hello. I really didn't intend to talk about okra. My question is really about cauliflower. However,
oh, Mary, where's your okra?
My grandchildren live in southern Georgia.
Wow,
and
okay.
When I go to eat hot lunch at their school, they have okra every day. And I tried it. And by the time you get to your table and start eating it, it's cold and yucky. And so I never developed a taste for okra. So anyway, but my question is about cauliflower. Yesterday I went grocery shopping and I wanted to buy cauliflower. And they had the white cauliflower and they had a bright orange cauliflower and a lime green cauliflower. I bought the orange. They had a little article there that told about it had more carotene in it, and the green had something else, and the cauliflower, the orange, had a nuttier flavor. I served it to my guest last night, who's an organic purist, and wouldn't eat it because he thought probably it was genetically engineered. I wonder if you could tell me about these colored cauliflowers.
I wish our dean were here right now, because she had some hand in the development of those cauliflowers, if I'm not mistaken, Irwin.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So the Mary to
so we can be, we can speak openly about this. So you haven't put any pressure on us as faculty members
to speak freely.
To speak freely.
What
about
a fabulous
this.
Idea
what
it was!
That was the most fabulous creative idea I've ever heard of, personally. You know, cauliflower grows for 30 years right before this. Every time you found anything that was off color, you would throw it away.
Yeah.
Right. Anything that had some, you know, carotenoid pigmentation, because it's, you know, it's not uncommon to find that at all. And now, of course, with the desire to have new things and new ideas, it's now it's become popular.
But Mary, you know, your question, your guest was concerned about it possibly being genetically engineered, and that's an important question. And in fact, it isn't. It is not genetically engineered by the conventional definition of those words. The only things out there that are growing in farmers' fields or in gardens that are genetically engineered would be Roundup Ready soybean, corn that's BT corn. So there is some genetically engineered cotton out there. But for the most part, all of your fruits and vegetables, the great majority of everything out there is not genetically engineered. So it's very safe to eat, and in fact, not that genetically engineered foods are unsafe. In fact, These foods that you're talking about here are just natural variants. This orange cauliflower, purple cauliflower, green cauliflower, these are just naturally occurring variants that have been now, as Jim said, preserved and sold and marketed.
How about that broccaflower?
Oh, say, that's a hybrid.
That's just a cross again. Let's say that when we say genetic engineering, it's true that plant breeders have been manipulating these vegetables forever. So, but that's broccaflower is just simply a cross between the two different vegetables.
Great. Okay.
Yeah, you're an organic purist. I think he ought to just lighten up.
Yeah.
A little. What's the problem there?
This is my son, and I've tried to tell him that.
It's hard to talk to the children. Lord knows I'm aware of that, but I think, you know, a little knock on the head, get a little sense in there, you know, is not going to hurt you one bit. I mean, if it's like a dinner guest and you want to be polite, but the children, just slap them around, you know, and let them know that it's okay.
Larry, I have to tell you, I am so sorry that the powers that be in public radio took you off the air at night, because I learned so much at night because I don't always get to listen full time at noon. I would love to be able to tell my son, turn it on tonight and listen, and I can't. And don't tell me the computer thing. I'm too illiterate to have a computer. However, he does, and so I'll tell him to plug it in and listen.
Tell him to email us. We'd love to talk about vegetables with him if he has any questions.
Is he at the UW? Can he take our class? Is there some problem?
He's in La Crosse.
Oh, he's in La Crosse. Well, I'll tell you what.
It's not that far to commute, is it?
it's a little ways.
Okay, all right.
But you can assure him that they were not genetically engineered in the sense that he's thinking of genetic engineering at all. And as a matter of fact, our dean would probably have a real nice answer
for
him.
Did you have to remind
that.
Us of that? We were going to speak. Yeah, I don't know. Well, don't put the pressure on, Larry. You know, like, go back to your office now, Jim. You know, find a little... The door is nailed shut.
No. She would never do that. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon or good morning, gentlemen.
Paul, where's your okra?
I'm so glad I tuned in today. last year, you guys helpfully coached me through the most successful chili crop I've had since I've lived in Duluth.
Oh.
And I'm still eating off of it. I have it roasted and peeled and frozen, and there's a big pot of green chili.
You roasted your chilies? God bless you, Paul.
Well, you know, I've got about 4 2-cup containers still in my freezer, and I make a pork, potato, and green chili stew with onions, and it's just absolutely fabulous.
You have to add some okra now.
Oh, well, that
and a mole sauce, you know,
maybe
to pour over the top.
Maybe I need to go down to New Orleans. I've had okra before. I can't say I'm really a fan. This year, I'm going to be industrious. I got my order of seeds from Jung on the coldest day of the year. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing nicer
you
than
ordered
getting...
this morning?
No, this was a couple of weeks ago. There's nothing nicer than that on a cold winter day to, you know, daydream.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But I want to grow leeks this year. And I'm kind of wondering what
wow,
I need...
we're just starting ours right now.
You're starting them indoors?
Yeah.
It's
so
perfect...
I could go ahead and do that.
It's like the first thing I grow. It's like starts off my... Paul, I know that you reflect on those seed catalogs, you know, those rapturous seed catalogs. And, you know, we just imagine what our summer is going to be like in these cold Wisconsin days. Mm-hmm. And I do that. And Irwin and I do the same thing. And the other thing we do is, you know, we don't have to worry about Groundhog Day. What we do is we plant our leeks. You know, in late February, because we have to, I have to transplant them. Mm-hmm. So that's what.
That's what I would be doing.
Yeah. So I there's a couple of hybrid varieties out there, but the leek is just
perfect.
God, it's like Wisconsin's best vegetable.
Just ideal.
Well, the one I order from Jung is Lancelot, and I love leeks. So.
Well.
So I should start
them now.
You're preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should I start those like any time?
Yeah.
I mean, I bought seed starting mix. Yeah.
Start them now.
Here's my question. When I transplant them, what do I need to do to prepare that soil? Does it? I read that it needs a loamy soil, and I'm not quite sure what that means.
Oh, I think for growing the leek, I think any soil is going to, you know, any of those standard mixes is going to work for starting the leek. All you're going to do is grow the leeks so that you can transplant them to your garden. I mean, that's what you're going to do. You're going to cut off the tops so they're nice and uniform. You're going to do it and then you're simply going to transplant them out into your garden. This is what I do every year.
And when do you transplant them out? Well,
I plant them out, you know, transplant them out is, you know, as soon as I can work the soil.
And in terms of working the soil, do you do much with the soil? Anything?
Not
special?
Me. I'm kind of lazy, actually. But I do pile up. You know, I do get a lot of compost, and I fill in between my rows with compost so that I get the light. So
that
I blanch
blanching.
The soil.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds terrific, gentlemen.
All right.
Look forward to hearing you next time.
All right. Good thanks, luck. Paul. And we have, let's see, Don and Holman. Hi. We got Don there. You know what? We'll get to Don. Don has a question, I think, for us, but I'm looking at the clock here, and the news is coming up. Our guests today, Professor Jim Nienhuis and Professor Irwin Goldman from the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin, our guest, and they will be with us right up until 12:30. So if you have a question about vegetables or maybe you've got a haiku you want to deliver to us, you can do that as well. And you'll have a chance to do that right after a look at the news here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and on this edition of Garden Talk, we're visiting with our Vicars of Vegetables, Professors Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman from the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Glad to have them along, and certainly join in with your own questions or comments as we move along here. And Don and Holman's been waiting a while and has a question for us, so let's go right to Don. Don, hi. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
I recently discovered a wonderful grain called quinoa, and I'm wondering if that is something that can be grown locally.
All right. Irwin, do you want to tell us a little about quinoa?
Well, that's a great question. I love quinoa also. It's a fabulous food. It's a very ancient Andean grain crop. And it's a plant that is very closely, it's in the same family as beet, closely related to things like lamb's quarter, a common weed around here. And it's typically grown in the mountains, in the Andean mountains. So from a climate point of view, I would suppose it's possible to grow, although I don't know anybody that's grown it here. I know people that have grown it as for the vegetable, you can consume, I think it's also mm-hmm. consumed as a vegetable. The foliage can be, but Jim, do you know anybody that grows it for the grain?
In the Western United States, I know that it was introduced, and there was a program actually to introduce it as an alternative crop into mm-hmm. Nebraska, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and maybe perhaps some other Western states, mm-hmm. because they were looking at a growing market,
sure.
for the quinoa grain.
Sure,
it's an interesting grain. I mean, yeah. it's tiny little seeds.
It's a tiny, very, very, very nutritious, very rich in protein, an excellent nutritional profile. So I bet it's definitely doable, and probably some listeners out there have grown quinoa or have thought about growing quinoa.
I've never grown it myself here.
Well, if anybody's grown it, call in and let us know here in Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan or Iowa or Illinois. Well, we'd love to find out.
That's a great question, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don and Boaz, you're next. Hi, Don.
Hello, this is Don from Boaz. Hey, I'm so pleased that Jim and Irwin are on. I learned so much when these fellas talk. Thank you, guys.
Sure thing.
Wow, I'm surprised to hear that.
Oh, well, don't be. A lot of us are so pleased to hear when you're going to be on here. Now that I have you all buttered up, I'm going to ask a couple questions.
Oop. Questions we can't answer. That's what.
Well, maybe we should wait for a nutritionist to come on. I was just curious about the nutritional value of the peppers that we grow. How do they rank are they a nutritious vegetable to eat, vitamins and things like that? And the other thing I was going to ask is, same as last year, I heard hints that you fellows tend to back away from the from the bell peppers. And I was going to ask you if you'd be kind enough to share the origin
the logic?
Of that attitude.
Yeah.
Well, let's take your nutrition question. The nutritional profile of a pepper is excellent, really excellent. They're very high in vitamin C. That's probably their most abundant vitamin. And then they've got going for them something that I think you'll see in all the very dark, rich-colored vegetables. They've got beta-carotene in the orange pepper, and they've got lycopene in the red pepper. And in the yellow pepper, they've got xanthophyll. All of those are what's called carotenoids, and they are very, very healthy for you. They're antioxidants, and in some cases, like beta-carotene, they actually get converted by your body into vitamin A. So the nutritional profile of a pepper is outstanding. It's very low in all sorts of things you don't want, and I would say it's absolutely top-notch.
Now, in terms of why you guys aren't big fans of the bell pepper as opposed to the other peppers,
hollow.
Well, I just before we came on the air today, Jim and I were sitting down. We were actually we teach a plant breeding class in the spring semester, and I was eating my lunch as I often do during class, and I ate a bell pepper just like an apple. I eat one just about every day, and Jim, you know, doesn't care for that. He makes faces at me, and I like the bell pepper like a crunchy vegetable you can have. You know, they're fabulous. But the objection is not for the bell pepper itself, but I think the objection, if I'm characterizing this right, is because of the tremendous array of high quality, spicy, fabulous peppers that are out there. Compared to those, the bell pepper just seems like cardboard.
Right.
Really. Yeah. Is that fair?
It's the flavor.
It's the flavor thing for me. I think you've really characterized it. If you look at the array of peppers that are available out there and the rich array of flavors and also even the pungencies.
Yeah.
I mean, every other pepper is hot. There's quite a range, right? I mean, you can have other mild peppers that have terrific flavor. One of the peppers that I would recommend, that if you don't like really, really hot peppers, you can either go with the Anaheim, which is pretty mild. Mm-hmm. The other is that has rich flavor is the Poblano.
Right, which has and they're aromatic,
right,
and they're flavorful. And so, you know, the bell pepper, I mean, great crunchy vegetable to sort of for the texture. I mean, sorry, Jim.
I understand.
But you know, that aroma when you cut into the habanero or the poblano, boy, that is fabulous.
It doesn't compare. So
Don, I think the objection is just by relatively speaking, just by comparison.
It's not a nutritional thing.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. They have fabulous nutritional profiles.
Thank you. Thank
all right. Thanks a lot, Don. Appreciate it. And Barb in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. On a side note, I'd like to tell you that I had this Doberman Pinscher who adored green peppers. It was her favorite food.
Yeah? Lots of dogs like vegetables. That's true.
Yeah, especially that one.
Aren't those sort of vicious dogs?
No, they're nice dogs.
Depends on how you train them.
Okay. So it wasn't associated with its cuisine at all.
No.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you that Milliger's in Racine has the very best plant starts for all vegetables all over the whole southeast Milwaukee. And they have okra, they have artichokes, they have everything. They have at least a dozen basils and three dozen tomato starts. And so,
Have they started their leeks already?
They probably have. They have. I have never found them lacking. They're amazing.
Milliger's
in Racine.
In Racine.
And it's worth the trip down there because you can get pretty much anything you want and anything you didn't even know you wanted.
that often happens when one visits a place
like
that.
After today's show, I think they're going to be able to grow some. They're going to probably start some okras.
I think so. And then their artichokes are really beautiful. I haven't gotten them to go to flower, but the foliage is so astoundingly beautiful that it's worth growing for the foliage.
Oh.
And that's great. And then I have to tell you that in the June and July organic gardening issue from 2006, there's a big article on okra. And it's, of course, native to Africa, and in Africa, okra grows as a perennial to 12 feet tall with a trunk 4 inches thick.
Boy, that is terrifying.
It is.
It's
it amazing,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, they talk about how to make it non-mucilaginous and mucilaginic, and what they do is to either let it dry at room temperature for several hours before using it,
so it gets
or
woody.
Soak it in vinegar with a pinch of salt for an hour before cooking, if you're going to do it in soups and stews. But if you're going to do it rapidly without adding cooking or frying it, you can also make that work. And they show some wonderful varieties that are Burgundy. Burgundy and Blondie and some really wonderful and beautiful plants.
That's great.
They're on the Serengeti Plain, these 12-foot tall okra plants.
Right. And
children climb them.
And they're used for weapons.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing it says is if you stop picking the okra, it will stop bearing. So it must be picked.
So you must keep picking.
Right, because otherwise then it's, I've seen that. That can happen, but and also to test it by snapping the tip. If the tip bends over, don't use it. But if it snaps off, then it's still tender.
Because yeah, it's a very indeterminate plant, so I mean that makes sense that you're going to have a situation where you just don't have determinate type okras where you can harvest them once. And this is part of the, maybe this is part of the reason why it's never really been commercialized is because it requires so much hand labor in terms of harvesting.
Yeah, it only works for the home gardener who really has time and.
Unless, of course, you're in the Serengeti and you can get them 12 foot.
Right.
Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
Barb, do you grow? You actually grow the artichokes? Do you?
Yes. Oh, okay. Because the foliage becomes about 3 feet wide and 3 feet high, and these gorgeous gray, fuzzy leaves. That the each leaf is like an aloe plant, sort of aloe plant.
Do you grow cardoon as well?
No, I haven't been, but I was thinking of doing that this year.
Okay, yeah, cardoon would be, I think, is also a fabulous. It's really kind of an ornamental vegetable.
Sure.
Yeah. But you can grow artichoke. There are people here in Wisconsin who do grow artichokes.
Oh, yeah.
And again, if you can, I mean, those have to be started well before February, of course. But if you can overwinter them in the greenhouse, you can put them out and actually grow artichoke.
Milligers has got them.
Milligers has got them, and they probably have them in the greenhouse overwintering right now.
I hope so.
Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
Roger in Spring Grove, Minnesota. You are next. Hi, Roger.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to join in this conversation about leeks, and I hadn't grown leeks for quite a few years, and last year I grew them, and I'd heard about this method where I started them in February, and then when I transplanted them in the garden, I took my Mantis tiller, and I tilled a trench about 8 or 10 inches deep, and then put some compost in that and retilled that, and planted the leeks in that trench, and then over the growing period, as the leeks get taller and taller, you just keep adding a little soil from the side of your trench, and follow that leek right up, and you'll get the maximum amount of white flesh, and that's what you want in a leek. And the second question was that I grow a lot of peppers, and I grow salsa peppers, and hot and sweet banana peppers, jalapenos, and they all do just marvelously as far as the yield, but I get very, very small yields on my sweet peppers. Can you offer any suggestion?
When do you plant them?
The peppers I plant in, probably late April, May.
And Spring Grove, Minnesota is located where in, say, relation to Minneapolis?
130 miles south.
South. Okay, so you're closer to them, even with Madison.
Even with La Crosse. Yep.
Even with La Crosse, excuse me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, late May on green peppers, on sweet peppers.
You know, I suspect that this is really, you know, every pepper is going to have a different flowering time and a different, resistance, for lack of a better word, to, you know, the environmental stresses. And peppers can sometimes end up, that you can simply end up with all of your buds just aborting.
Well, they hate temperatures under, 50 degrees?
Oh, yeah. And they also hate temperatures over 100 degrees, right? Because the pollen will blast, is what it's referred to. It'll just cook the pollen. So I think I think what he's really seeing there is the range of tolerances to specific environmental stresses. And, you know, in any given year, if you grow out 10 different pepper varieties, you're going to find that one of those pepper varieties is not going to work in any given year simply because it simply niches with the wrong environment.
So if you got a temperature below 50 degrees or, you know, and maybe considerably below even one night, you can have problems with your peppers.
Or, or even more likely, is during flowering, you're going to get either a water stress or a temperature stress.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And because they, those 10 varieties are flowering and having water requirements at different times, that's what's happening.
Yeah, interesting.
So the thing to do is to watch when the
it's bad luck, you know.
When they start budding for flowers?
I think the thing to do is to simply grow, you know, I think you're doing the right thing, right, is to grow an array of different peppers.
Okay.
Right? And the fact that you're losing your bell peppers, well, I mean, that's not such a bad thing, is it?
It is for Roger.
Okay, but it's for Roger.
Thanks, Raj, for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Mount Zion, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Larry, and thank you for the show. What could be a better thing than growing your own food organically? You know, you guys are talking about some great things, and we've been talking about leeks. I have a variety from Seed Savers out of Decorah, which I would really highly recommend because it's within our region. And I think it's kind of important to get seeds that are acclimated to our area. The seed I really like for leeks is the Blue Soleil. I think that's the proper pronunciation.
How's it spelled?
That's S-O-L-A-I-Z-E. And that must be French. But it's a great leek, and it acclimates well. I even had them winter over 2 years ago so that I could pick them in spring, chip them right out of the ice, and they were as good as they were in autumn. And the trick, one of the things, and I think you guys touched on it, like adding to the last caller, is to build up along the sides. And you mentioned compost, which, of course, is good, but just good organic hay mulch. Mm-hmm. And you put that hay mulch and keep pushing it down and up around the leeks, and you get these beautiful, long, white, thick, and then to thin them. And then that way you'll get really nice thick leeks. But don't forget to put those parsnips in there too, so you can have that into the stew or into the soup. You know, I like the Andover. You get that beautiful sweet roasted parsnip in spring, and that's an awesome thing. This is another point I'd like to bring up is Midwest Organic Farming Conference this year, the 18th year.
This next Friday, right?
Yeah, and it's sponsored by Moses. The Organic University starts on Thursday. It's going to be a great year. There's so much information there. There's so many contacts, supplies, seeds, everything. And people could go to info@mosesorganic.org. And I think it's an incredible event. And it's here in Wisconsin in La Crosse. You can learn so much there. But I really appreciate this show. It's great.
Thank you very much for calling. And in fact, we had the director of Moses on the show just a few days ago, as a matter of fact, to kind of plug that conference. It is a great conference, and it's the largest of its kind, I think. Well, certainly in the Midwest, but I think in the country.
I agree.
It's lots of, I think there's, you know, there'll be 2,500 people there probably this year.
Erwin, what is blue about the Blue Soleil leek?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I don't know. The foliage is so deep,
maybe
color that
think
you get
it's
the...
so blue that it just sort of radiates with that Frenchness. That it must be the deep blue.
It could be. You know, and the blanching that both
greens,
Chris and Roger described is really the right technique. Yeah. You know, that's beautiful. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. And the planting, it reminds me of starting an asparagus bed in a way, isn't it? Filling up as the
that's right.
as the plant goes. Todd and Fairchild, it's your turn, isn't it? Hi.
Yeah, hi, guys. I don't have a question. I just wanted to give you your okra haiku.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah.
Ed, where's your okra? You say you don't grow none, huh? That's why you're puny.
Todd, that is a very good one. I like that one a lot. And as a matter of fact, we got a couple of other haikus over the news break. And Jim, maybe you want to read those haikus.
Oh heavens! We did in fact get those. Here's one on salsa. It is tomatoes, peppers, garlic, onions, spices, limes. Delicious salsa. And we were provided an alternative last line, which is chop, eat, and enjoy.
That's good one.
You know, I don't know. I'm inspired. You know, that's the beautiful thing about Wisconsin winters is that it lets our imaginations run wild as we look through seed catalogs and think about salsa. Here's another one. Mm-hmm. Here it is, February in Madison. Frigid, frozen month. My seed catalogs warm me. Keep me from freezing.
another good one. Todd, thanks again for calling. Dick in Springfield, Wisconsin, it is your turn. Hi, Dick.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
10, 15 years ago,
I remember reading a number of times in the newspaper about a grass that was going to be imported and established from Africa. And rather than eating it, the purpose was to get the fibers to make newspapers. And somebody was trying to put together a consortium of newspaper companies to finance this because they were afraid the cost of regular timber fiber was going to go through the roof. And I cannot remember the name of the grass, and I was wondering if your fellows can.
I think that was marijuana, right? Isn't that what the...
I forgot until you said that. There was... They were having trouble because it was related somehow to hemp, or it was a hemp-like grass. And
it could have been the political climate could have been, you know, inappropriate for that.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's why it was being talked up.
I don't know what the grass was. I'm sorry.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
But if it can be sautéed, you know, we would have thought about it.
Shireen from Springbrook, it's your turn. Hi, Shireen.
Hi. I'd like to mention the wild leeks. Because my husband always went out and collected the wild leeks in northern Wisconsin, and they were so strong that we had to keep the truck window open coming home. And when they ate them, you could smell the people coming through the room. It just seemed to come out of their pores.
You bet.
But once we cooked them, they were all mild. Mm-hmm. But we kind of turned our son off because he and his friend were going to eat them, and we said, well, if you're going out on dates, you don't want to eat them because those girls aren't going to appreciate it.
On the other hand, any woman who could appreciate that would be
a
keeper.
That's our kind of person.
Yeah, that's our kind of woman.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have never bought the tame leeks in the grocery store. Are they much milder?
Oh, yeah. They are.
What is the story here, Irwin? Are these feral, or is this the same genus and species, or what's the deal?
No, it's not. I mean, leek is Allium amplopraesum. It's the cultivated type is really something, you know, that is different from the wild onions and wild leeks that we have here. But they are in the same family. They are alliums.
Why the name Chicago arrived, right? It was probably named after the wild leek or the wild onion.
That's exactly right. Chicago, before it was developed, it was a bog where wild alliums were found. An onion bog, essentially. Mm-hmm. So wild onions, wild leeks, things called ramps are very common out here, and they're fabulous. Many of them are extremely high in the organosulfur compounds, and of course those are heat killed when you cook. So that's why that disappeared when you made your cooked leeks.
They transplant very well, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to go out. It is a heavy soil where they grow, and there are things like trout lily and things there that are. It's heavy black soil, but they do very well. Acres and acres of them.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate it very much, Shireen. You know, while we were talking, I went online and just into a search engine and typed in grass from Africa for making paper. And there are 1,140,000 entries on it online. So Stipa tenacissima of northern Africa. Mm-hmm. It's a tough, wiry grass used for making paper.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I knew that, and I pretended that I didn't, actually. I just didn't know how to pronounce that, is really the issue.
Yeah, it's not an easy one to pronounce. Well, have you got, in this last 40 seconds, any last words for our gardeners?
Well, it's the time of the year, right, to look through those seed catalogs.
Absolutely.
And start your leeks. Unless, of course, you want to harvest the wild leeks, which...
Well, you do both.
Yeah, why not do both? And we won't be starting anything else yet, though, probably, for the vegetable garden. Not for a while, anyway. A month?
I would be patient.
Still a little early.
And remember that if you're going to grow your seedlings, boy, remember that you need lots of light, right? And or else you're going to have, you know, wiry, thin... you know, transplants, and those are not going to transplant well. You need robust, actively growing plants, and I think it needs a lot more light than I think people realize.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. We'll look forward to your next visit. Our Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman from the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Always a pleasure to have them here, and they will be back again, and we'll talk with them some more. I look forward to it. Coming up on Monday, we'll talk with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about aches, pains, sprains, and strains. They're physical therapists, and we'll look forward to visiting with them. And in the meantime, thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.